Welcome to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown, and today I have the three authors of Political Advertising in the United States here to talk about their new book from Westview Press. In order, Erica Franklin Fowler. How are you doing today, Erica?
I'm well, thanks.
What about you, Michael Franz?
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Good. And Travis Ridout, are you there as well?
I am. Thank you.
Good. It's such a pleasure to have the three of you on. Erica, maybe you can start off and just give us your quick rundown of who you are and where you are.
Sure. So Erica Franklin Fowler, and I'm an assistant professor of government at Wesleyan University and co-director, along with Mike and Travis, of the Wesleyan Media Project, which tracks all political advertising aired on broadcast television and national cable in real time during elections.
Good. And Mike, how about yourself?
Well, my name is Mike Franz, and I'm an associate professor of government and legal studies at Bowdoin College in Brunswick, Maine.
Good. And Travis, yourself?
I am a political science professor across the country at Washington State University.
Good. And through the power of the internet, the four of us are in four different places, but have come together via the internet to talk today. And in the interest of time, let's talk about your interesting and of course, very timely book, Erica. We think of television advertising and campaigns as a somewhat new thing, but would you start us off by telling us a little bit about how far back this goes in U.S. politics? How long have television advertising been used?
Well, television has been around for quite a while, as you know, and so television ads really aren't anything new. I would say that to sort of flip the question on its head, that television, I think today's day and age, it's almost seen as the dinosaur in terms of campaign strategy. It's the biggest, the oldest way in which campaigns in the modern era have tried to reach citizens.
Good. And so what about a first ad or a first campaign that made significant use of television advertising? Where do we peg this?
I mean, I think one of the earliest ads that you would have to talk about when it comes to television advertising is, of course, the Daisy ad, where if you're unfamiliar with the ad, it's definitely worth a YouTube lookup. But the ad starts with a little girl picking petals off of a daisy, and she's counting down backwards, and then it goes to the screen where there's a countdown to a nuclear explosion. Obviously, one of the most controversial ads that's ever been aired. It was pulled off air almost immediately.
So Mike, this history goes back. How about this from the business side? How big a business is political advertising? Would you give us a couple of indicators of the amounts of money that campaigns and other political groups spend on political advertising in a given electoral cycle?
Yeah, the political advertising on television and political advertising more generally is a sizable portion of many candidates' budgets. That's not a universal truth because campaigns up and down the ballot access voters in different ways. But if we're looking at or interested in, say, federal elections and Senate candidates, for example, sort of a traditional sort of big sort of electoral environment, we know that campaigns spend upwards of 45% of their campaign budget on media of some form or another, television advertising, online advertising, radio advertising. Even House candidates who have smaller constituencies can spend anywhere between 30 and 40% of their entire budget on media. It's not easy to get a handle on those numbers, but we know that from itemized expenditure reports that candidates make to the Federal Election Commission. And so in competitive races, it can be even higher. In presidential elections, it's even higher. And so much of the money being spent in our election environment today is attempts to reach voters via mass media.
Now, Travis, this really does beg this question of why. Why do candidates use political ads? And do these ads work in the ways that candidates believe they do?
Good question. Ads do work. That's not to say that they're going to make all the difference in the world. And ironically, ads seem to work the most in an uncompetitive race where we tend to see fewer ads. But, you know, in a highly competitive, say, Senate race or presidential race, if one side can out-advertise the other side by several thousand gross ratings points, then that could make the difference in who wins.
Now, this term you use, gross ratings point, would you give us the real quick description of what that is? What is that metric that you're using?
Just the percentage of people who are watching TV at a particular time who are seeing your ad. It's complicated. It's what the advertising people like to speak in terms of. Oftentimes, we just speak in terms of the count of ads or the number of ads that are being aired.
Now, Erica, you have this really interesting chapter about the mechanics of building a political ad. Would you walk us through the different types of advertisements, who makes them, and how those ads make it on the air?
Sure. There are lots of different ways in which ads are created and tested. I assume that's what the chapter that you're referring to.
Yep.
I think the first thing that's important to think about when you think about advertising are what we refer to as the elements of an ad. So thinking about what the length of the ad is, you know, most ads are 30 seconds on television, although there are 15 second ads, there are 60 second ads, and there are sometimes ads that air a lot longer than that. We also track the tone of the ad. So in our classification, there are three different types of tone of ads. You have pure promotional spots, which are ads that talk only about the favored candidate. There are pure attack ads, which talk only about the opposing candidate, save for the paid-for byline. And then the contrast ad would be one that mentions both candidates. So as campaign strategists are putting these things together, they're thinking about the length, the message, the tone, and then they're going to think very carefully about things like visual images and color, whether or not they're doing a negative or a positive ad may drive that choice of tone and color. So if you're airing a negative or an attack ad, it's not unusual to find dark images, sometimes grainy quality photos. If you're doing an appeal to enthusiasm, by contrast, you might go for much brighter colors. And then there's evidence to suggest also that campaigns think carefully about the voiceovers that are used. So it's not just the people that you're seeing in the ad, but also who's speaking on camera. We can talk more about this later, but the default voice in political advertising tends to be the male voice. There are some exceptions to that, but political ads are overwhelmingly dominated by men's voices. And then, of course, the choice of music will also help underscore the emotional appeal. So in a negative attack, you might find some ominous music. You might also find, you know, some tense or sort of eerie music, whereas in a positive ad, you might be much more likely to see more uplifting music. So those are the elements of the ad. Do you want me to continue to talk about how they're tested?
Yeah, the testing, I think, is really interesting, if you would.
Sure. So there are lots of different ways in which advertising can be tested. And Travis or Mike, feel free to jump in if you want to take it from here. But there are campaigns will often do some initial analysis on the voters that they're trying to reach. So they may reach out with a benchmark survey to try to determine how people feel about the issues, how they feel about particular candidates, if they know the candidates. And then they're going to start to try to identify what sets of voters they will go after. Campaigns have gotten much more sophisticated about this, such that they're even targeting specific individuals instead of just demographic groups now. But still, in terms of advertising, they're generally thinking about these segments of the population that they might try to go after. And in terms of the actual testing, there are a variety of different ways in which ads will be tested, from focus groups to online, what I would call sort of the focus group on steroids, which Ace Metrics does, and I can kick it over to Travis if he wants to explain a little bit about them and what they do.
Yeah, Travis, do you want to give us a quick introduction to that approach?
Sure, it's not too complicated, but what several companies have started doing is getting a sample of individuals from across the country and then showing them particular ads online and then gauging their reactions to those ads. And so the great thing about that for campaigns is they can get an almost immediate response as to whether people are finding those ads persuasive, maybe even which parts of the ads they like, which part they don't like, and can even make changes to the ad in response to that or take down an ad that's not particularly effective.
Now, Mike, despite what you said earlier about the huge amount spent on campaign ads, there are regulations to consider. Would you talk a little bit about some of the broad outlines of what money can and cannot be used on advertising and different types of ads at that?
Sure. In fact, the history of campaign finance is actually, in some ways, a history also of political advertising financing, because the many of the provisions of campaign finance laws as far back as into the 1970s were designed to respond to the sense that campaign advertising was being spent or was consuming a large share of campaign budgets and influencing the structure of campaigns. So back into the 1970s, Congress considered legislation that would have prevented members of Congress from spending more than a certain percentage of their campaign funds on political ads. That's not in effect currently, but Congress debated that and momentarily put that into effect. There were provisions for a while that limited campaigns in total from how much money they could spend. And there have been provisions in place for a while that have prevented large collections of funds from funding political advertisements if they directly advocated for or against a candidate. So much of what Congress has been considering for over a generation has been about the way money is spent in campaigns. And we know a lot now that, you know, Citizens United versus FEC, a big Supreme Court case in 2010, overturned much of the restrictions on non-candidate groups, outside groups, from the way they funded their elections, such that now there are very few restrictions on what folks can do to sponsor TV ads, how they can be funded and who can pay for them. There are, in fact, more restrictions on what candidates and political parties can do with their funds than what the outside groups can do. So the flow of campaign finance laws and the debate in Congress about them has directly impacted and been about, in many ways, the political advertising and its ubiquitousness in our political system.
Now, Travis, one of the things that these campaign finance regulations have had trouble dealing with is the rise of digital media and exactly how to regulate the various ways that one can now use all the different outlets that are available in the digital format. How are digital advertising options changing in some significant ways the advertising game? Is it empowering new players? Is it changing what we hear from candidates? Tell us about this new world that we're living in.
It is indeed a new world. We make a distinction in the book between earned online media, which is, I think, more like the traditional television advertising in a sense that the campaigns pay to have their ads show on a particular website, maybe a newspaper's website. And there is some regulation of that. But so much of what's going on online is what is earned online media. In other words, it's trying to get a video to go viral on YouTube, on Facebook, through other social media channels. And of course, the campaigns aren't paying for that type of advertising. And so the trick is designing something that is going to be catch the attention of people who are online. It's going to make someone click on that, send it to their friends, And so it is kind of this vast world that's by and large unregulated.
Now, Erica, you must watch more political ads than just about anyone. Has there been an advertisement in this presidential cycle that has caught your eye, either for how effective or ineffective it appears to you as an expert?
Yeah, I will say that we have watched many, many, many ads. I will say that the students who work for our project may see even more than I have personally.
Right.
And we're very grateful for their work. As for advertising this cycle, I would say, I mean, and I welcome Mike and Travis's thoughts as well. What strikes me the most about this current presidential cycle is the lack of the standout ad, actually. I have yet to see one that really stands out as being unique or different. And there are lots of them out there. There are lots of them that are gaining some traction. And I think some of the most effective ads this cycle are not necessarily the ones that are negative or attacking. I think Bernie Sanders ads have really gotten high scores in part because they are uplifting. But I think, on the whole, that most of the ads this cycle tend to be using the same sort of playbook. And I think in this stage, especially, it's becoming a different story now as the Republican race is really, narrowing in. But if you look at, Jeb Bush was up on the air for ages, very early on. And what's striking in particular about the Right to Rise, his super PAC that was up on air, they were, when they started attacking his opponents, they were not just going after one directly initially, they were going after all of them. So this one ad that zeroes in on the Oval Office and they have multiple candidates appearing behind the desk and giving you reasons why you should not vote for each one of them in a 30-second ad, that's really a hard message to convey. And so I think, at least from my perspective, that there hasn't been one that's really stood out in the way that ads in prior cycles have. I'd be curious to see what Mike and Travis think. But I'm comparing it in particular to, so for example, in 2014 when Joni Ernst's Squeal ad, which has this really clever play on pork, both in the farming context and the governmental context, really catches on and becomes this sensation that there hasn't been something like that, at least that I've seen this so far this cycle.
Yeah, and Mike, what do you think? Is the pace of advertising what you expected? Is this a surprise that we're not seeing some of the creativity or the standouts that we have come to expect, given the increasing amounts of money, and I would have to think increasingly smart people who are getting into the advertising game? How come they haven't produced an ad yet that has caught our attention?
Well, in part because I think this is sort of a catch-22 in many ways for campaigns, or it's sort of a tough spot to be in. On the one hand, they want to design an ad that stands out and goes viral in ways that Travis and Erica have discussed, gets a lot of free coverage. And those ads tend to be the ones that do something really almost outrageous, showing a candidate shooting a gun or shooting, something, holding a gun to a camera or talking about, being witches or something. And they're kind of so far out there that we talk about them and they run viral. But the campaigns that are probably the most effective, I would say, are the ones that we would assume professional ad makers actually make, which is a more traditional ad that's, well put together, shows the candidate surrounded by his or her family or walking down Main Street, and doesn't necessarily stick in our brains as a sort of outrageous or really sort of something insane, but is designed to leave a subconscious message for us in the short term, really, something that's a message about policy or a message about the candidate's background that we just think is really great, but we don't necessarily think the ad itself is anything new or innovative. And so campaigns want to do those things. They don't want to make too many waves about, sort of brand new types of formats, but they also want their message to be spread. So I think that might be, one of the reasons why we haven't seen those kinds of ads this cycle. The campaigns are investing a lot in trying to do just traditionally good ads. The thing that stands out for me, or the thing that I find really fascinating, and we'll see how it plays out in congressional elections and in the presidential cycle, and this may affect the kinds of ads we're watching, is the presence of these outside groups, the super PACs, the ones that have been emboldened by recent court cases, the ones that can spend unlimited sources of funds and raise them in unlimited amounts. They're advocating for candidates in ways that we've never seen before. They're pushing their preferred candidates with millions and millions of dollars, and they can't coordinate the candidates. So the ads that they make may not necessarily be the kinds of ads that the campaign would prefer to have on the air. And that's a kind of question, comparing the sort of content of campaign ads from candidates and from groups, supportive groups, that is something we want to spend a lot of time on in our analysis.
Yeah, and Travis, just to wrap up, we have been talking mainly about kind of the election that we're in right now and the ads we've seen. But what about what we might see over the next 8 months as congressional candidates start to enter our conversation, as candidates at the state and even the local level start to get involved in campaign advertising? Are there things that we can either look forward to or not look forward to, depending on how you view political ads?
Well, I think it's safe to say the presidential general election race is going to be a pretty negative race this year. The way to defeat Donald Trump, I think a lot of the political analysts agree, is to tear him down, to start going negative. And we're already starting to see that with the commitment by some outside groups to spend at least $10 million to run negative ads to try to at least prevent him from getting the Republican nomination. Democrats are already plotting their anti-Trump strategy. And, you know, if Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nomination, you're going to see a lot of negativity against her as well. So I'm not saying it will be negativity at an unprecedented level, but I think we have a pretty negative race to look forward to.
Well, that is quite a note to end our conversation on, particularly because the book you have written collectively is so enjoyable. Again, the title, Political Advertising in the United States, published by Erica, Mike, and Travis by Westview Press. Thank you all for your time today. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was great.